I'm Dan Hughes in the Old Time Radio Corner. Names like George Burns, Jack Benny, Edgar Bergen, Fred Allen, and Ed Wynn are recognized by most older Americans, but for every superstar, there were dozens of second-tier radio personalities who have been pretty much forgotten. Bob Burns is one of those names that has slipped from America's general knowledge database. But let's take a look at his credentials. As a down-home, easygoing, philosophical comedian, he was known as the Arkansas Traveler. In the late 1930s, he was a regular on first the Rudy Valley radio show, then the Kraft Music Hall. He got his own radio show in 1941, and it ran for 6 years. But wait, there's more. Bob Burns was the host of the 1938 Academy Awards show. He wrote a newspaper column that was carried in 240 newspapers across the United States. He acted in 25 movies, and he was the leading star in 8 of those. And perhaps most importantly, he is responsible for the name of a famous army weapon. When he was young, he invented a goofy musical instrument made from a modified gas pipe, which he called the bazooka. The house band for the Bob Burns radio show was good enough to later get their own show, Spike Jones and His City Slickers. In this episode, the City Slickers perform a fantastic song called The Sound Effects Man, in which they mention several famous sound effects like Fibber McGee's Closet. I think you'll like it. They perform right after the Bob Burns opening monologue here. From May 6, 1943, here's the Bob Burns Show.
Down in Arkansas.
My folks down there are tall and lean. They look just like a big string bean, and some of them are just as green.
Down in Arkansas.
Lifebuoy presents the Bob Burns Show, bringing you latest news of those kinfolks in Van Buren. More doings of the Arkansas Traveler, Spike Jones and his City Slicker. Now, here he is himself, Bob Burns.
Well, I certainly am much obliged. You know, ain't it a wonderful thing that all of us can gather here once a week? We can have a meeting of all us vegetarians. ain't that meat situation getting terrible? Honestly, I don't know which is going to expire first, me or my meat coupon. But I've been talking about the meat situation here so long now, you know I've got to be known as quite an authority, and I'm awful proud of it. But the way everything's all mixed up, I think it's a good idea for one of us to know all about this thing. Why, just day before yesterday, my telephone rang, and I answered the phone, and some man asked me, he says, "Pardon me, but can you tell me what the ceiling price is on pork chops?" Well, I says, "Brother, I don't want to make a mistake. Why don't you call the OPA?" And the fella says, "This is the OPA." But anyhow, I've been looking into this meat situation, and I found out one thing. I found out what causes black market. You know what makes the black market? Well, I'll tell you. It's too few hogs inside the pig pen and too many hogs on the outside of the pig pen. But anyhow, while we're talking here, I just want to tell you that if you folks want to stop this black market, just don't pay any higher price than you're supposed to. Just kick like a bay steer, honestly, when they try to charge you too much. Do what I did just day before yesterday. I come in town here and went to the restaurant to have dinner, and the waiter gave me my check, and it was too much. Now, I had ordered roast, and so I called the manager over. I says, "Look at this check here." I says, "He charged me too much." And the manager says, "Well, what did you order?" I says, "I ordered roast." And he says, "What did you get?" I says, "I got roast." And he says, "Well, then what are you kicking about?" I said, "But the waiter has charged me for steak." And the manager says, "Oh, well, now that's a horse of a different color." Speaking of horses and black markets, things like that, just reminds me that the dark horse of radio is the sound effects man. They call him the forgotten man of radio. But tonight, Spike Jones and the city specials are going to throw the spotlight on that fella. I think after you hear Spike Jones and his voice play and hear Del Porter sing, the sound effects man, you ain't never going to forget him again. Go ahead, boy. What could we do without the sound effects, man? That radio racketeer. Just tune your dial and listen a while. This is what you'll hear. There's a knock up on the door. That's the sound effects, man. Here's a kiss and maybe more. That's the sound effects, man. If you lock a ring, he'll give you a ding, ding, ding. And even in the early morn, you'll hear him blowing his horn. Cowboys riding 50 bucks. That's the sound effects man. Three more Redskins bite the dust. That's the sound effects man. He has such an awful lot to do, and yet he very seldom ever misses a cue. He's a three-alarm fire and the fire chief too. Here comes the sound effects man. When the wind is howling.
Sound effects man.
Hear the thunder growling.
Yeah, that's the sound effects man.
When the battle is raging, he's right in the middle of the fray. But when he blows his whistle, crime doesn't pay. Danny's old Maxwell chugging right along. That's the sound effects man. When Kay Kaiser gets the answers all wrong.
Students?
That's the sound effects man. Hear those footsteps. What a lot of noise they make. This is what you hear on information, please, when they make a big mistake. Tailspin Tommy in his aeroplane. That's the sound effects man. When Jerry Colonna breaks a window pane. That's the sound effects man. Why, he has gadgets by the score. From a peanut whistle to a cannon's roar. When Pepper opens up his closet door, look out! That's Willie Spicer, the sound effects man.
You know, the music that Spike Jones boy plays, it may not be very refined, but it sure is pretty. You know, it reminds me of a girl I knew back in Arkansas. Her name was Prunella. She sure was pretty.
But Bob, wasn't she refined, too?
Well, I was coming to that, Dick. In one way, she was. Susie Prunella, she used the fanciest perfume in the Ozarks. Cost pretty near 30 cents a gallon. Why, it did, and it was worth it, too. That perfume was called New Et de la Come Hither. That's the name of it. You know, even if there wasn't a fellow within the range of 10 miles who would come hither.
Well, Bob, didn't anybody ever suggest to Susie that she ought to take a good, honest life boy back?
No, Dick, they didn't. And Susie pretty near cried her poor little eyes out, just yearning for a date.
You know, it makes me sad to hear cases like that, Bob. Because so many attractive girls suffer from unpopularity just because of B.O. Why don't people realize that Lifebuoy is the only soap especially made to stop B.O.?
Well, a lot of people do.
Why don't they realize that the surest and pleasantest way to stop B.O. is to take a Lifebuoy bath every day?
A lot of people do.
Why, you step out of a Lifebuoy bath clean and fresh with lots of pep and no B.O. Why don't people realize that? If Susie Prunella only knew about Lifebuoy, I'd bet she'd become popular in no time at all. Excuse me. Hello.
Mr. Lane, this is Susie Prunella. Mm. I heard what you said about Lifebuoy, and I just wanted to let you know I took your advice. Mm. No, Tyrone, let me think it over. I'm not sure I want to marry you. No. No. Oh, Tyrone.
Hello. Hello, hello. Telephone's dead.
Well, there's one thing you got to say for that Tyrone McGuffey. Boy, he sure is pretty near as fast as Lifebuoy.
And now let's look in on the town where the Arkansas Traveler holds forth as newspaper editor. It's a cool day, but the Traveler is just boiling as he talks to Pat Mitchell, his oldest reporter.
And though I told Dewey over and over to let nobody in the office unless he states his business, here I get a summons to serve on the jury.
Oh, Traveler, Dewey doesn't understand. Nobody likes to be tapped for jury duty.
As if I didn't have enough to do.
Must be on the Bradish murder case, huh?
Yeah. Say, Pat, you're covering that case. What's the lowdown?
Oh, not much to it. The sheriff found the body of Hank Busby on the Bradish farm full of lead from a 12-gauge shotgun. The kind Bradish owns. The prosecutor says he can prove Bradish and Busby quarreled about back wages.
So what's Bradish's side of the story?
Oh, claims he shot in self-defense. Says Busby threatened to beat him up.
Any witnesses to the actual shooting?
Yeah, one.
Who is it?
Oh, this'll kill you.
Well, let's finish with one body at a time. Who?
Single-track Simpson claims he saw the fight.
Single-track Simpson?
Can you imagine what'll happen when he gets on the stand?
Holy smoke. Why, the jury'll stay in that box for months. I declare I never knew a man in my life quite like that single-track Simpson. Why, you don't dare interrupt him when he gets going because he always just starts his story all over again. Now, you take the time that Singletrack came in here to tell me he decided to renew his subscription. I made the mistake of stopping him. Come to town today for?
Well, sir, a couple of weeks ago, I seen the posters advertising the circus was coming to town. That is, my cousin Mortimer Barnside, he seen the posters and showed them to Fred Buell. That's Buell's on the other side of Smoky Mountain. Well, I told Mark.
Now,
Mark...
Wait a minute, Singletrack. I'm a pretty busy man. I suppose you just get to the point of why you came in.
Well, sir, that's what I'm aiming to do. A couple of weeks ago, I seen the posters advertising the circus. That is, my cousin Mortimer Barnside, he seen the posters.
That man took 4 hours to tell me he wanted to renew his subscription.
That's Singletrack Simpson, all right.
Yeah, doggone it, he talks so long, by the time he'd finished, his subscription pretty near run out again. Every time I interrupted, he started the whole story over, word for word. Well, listen, I'm pulling every string I know to get out of that jury if he's a witness. Get me Judge Bixby on him. Oh, you standing there, Dewey?
Chief Walsh, I'm awful sorry I let that man into your office.
Well, let this be a lesson to you, Dewey.
Boss, I don't want to lie to you. I knew that man was going to give you a paper calling you to jury duty.
What, and you still let him in?
Well, boss, I thought you'd want to.
What in the world ever gave you an idea like that?
Well, at school, our teacher in civics, she said serving on a jury was a sacred privilege. She said there aren't many countries left where a man, when he's in trouble, can have his case heard by his peers. Or something. She says a man should be proud to serve on a jury.
I see.
Guess my teacher's wrong and a man ought to get out of it any way he can, huh?
No, Dewey. You believe your teacher, not me. I was just joking about it anyhow, you see. I think it's a great idea. Now you run along, finish sealing those envelopes.
Yes, sir.
Well, Traveler, you going to call Judge Bixby and get out of this?
No, Pat. You know, I've pretty near ruined the fine job of education our schools have done on my office for. I guess I'm a soft. I'll show up in court tomorrow.
Hear ye, hear ye. The case of the people versus Amos Bradish. The honorable court resumed. Afternoon, Judge.
Afternoon, Bailiff. Read the names of the jurors accepted by prosecution and defense and swear them in.
Calling have been accepted, Your Honor. Mortimer Hopkins, Hannibal Weems, the Traveler, Alexander Green, Nathan Thompson.
Main 4673, please. Oh, hello, Dewey. Listen, get my clean shirt, socks, pajamas, and the toothbrush down to the city hall right away. And a gin rummy desk. And say, stop and get me a book. Oh, I don't care what book it's about. You know, just get me a book, as long as it's a long book.
Now, Your Honor, as defense attorney, may I call my first and only witness?
You may.
This man will testify, Your Honor, that my client, Amos Bradish, acted completely in self-defense. Mr. Singletrack Simpson.
Get on the stand, please, Singletrack. Put up your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, whole truth, not look the truth.
Yes, sir. Hey, just like I told my wife once.
The witness will answer questions as put. You swear to tell the truth, Mr. Simpson?
Well, sir, just like I told my wife.
Mr. Defense Attorney, did you carefully instruct your witness on the rules of evidence before appearing in this court?
I did, Your Honor. Well, I don't know what good it's going to do. I just don't want this case to drag on till about Christmas. As long as you question it.
Mr. Simpson, what is your name?
My name? Well, sir, my mother always called me...
Your occupation.
Huh? Don't you want to know my name first?
Aren't you a farmer on the Smoky Hill section?
Well, we do grow a few peanuts and garden sets.
Mr. Simpson, where were you at 4 o'clock the afternoon of March 27th?
You come again?
Where were you the day Hank Busby got shot?
Oh, that day. Well, sir, I had an old barn in the lower corner of the South 40. It kind of killed it over because the termites got into the foundation. Well, my cousin Dillard Weems and his wife and her sister, that's Mabel Purdy from Pine Holler, she happened to drop in, and I said, Cousin Dillard, if you and
your
wife stop a spell...
This testimony is irrelevant and immaterial. I object.
I am forced to agree, Mr. Prosecutor. Can't the defense attorney get the witness to the point?
I'll try, Your Honor. Look, single track. Did you or didn't you actually see Hank Busby shot the afternoon of March 27th?
Huh?
Look, just tell what you actually saw.
Well, that's what I'm aiming to do. You see, I had an old barn on the lower corner of the South 40 that kind of killed it over because the termites got into the foundation. Well, my cousin...
Your Honor, same ground.
Judge, there's only one way this witness will ever give us the facts, and that's by never interrupting him. I ask a certain indulgence of the court.
Very well. Prosecutor, the court asks you not to interrupt again unless the witness is definitely not telling what he heard or saw.
Your Honor, I can't accept such a...
The defense will proceed.
Single track.
Yes, sir.
You can tell your story in your own way from now on. Just take your time. What happened on March 27th?
Well, sir, I had an old barn in the corner of the South 40. They kind of killed it over because of termites. Board and figured on driving up to Amos Bradish's place. Well, my cousin's wife's sister. Amos Bradish. Well, I heard once that Hank threatened to get...
I object!
No, shucks, that almost finished.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The witness wasn't telling what he himself heard or saw.
Sustained. Go on, single track.
Doggone it, now I forgot where I was. Well, sir, I have no barn on the corner of the South Quarter. It's kind of killed over and it comes to turn my skin in.
This court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Of course, she was Mabel Purdy's second cousin. She married Isaiah Pringle. That was on May 1934. No, that was May 1935.
This is an impossible situation. 3 days gone by and we're getting nowhere. This witness can't observe rules of evidence. I may disqualify him.
Oh, Judge, can I say a word?
Yes, Traveler.
Judge, can a juryman ask the witness questions?
Well, certainly, if they're to the point.
Well, now, I've got an idea. If single...
I object. This is most direct.
You keep quiet, Mr. Prosecutor. This court is here to get at the truth. If one man fails, I'm willing to let another try. Go ahead, Traveler.
Well, I think from what Single Track's already said, we've got some idea what happened on March 27th. Now, let's see if we can put it all together. For one thing, I'm pretty certain the witness has a barn on the corner of his South 40 that kind of killed it over because the termites got the foundation. So he and his cousin Dillard Weems hitched up the buckboard and went over to Brady's place to borrow some tools to fix it.
Well, that ain't so. We went over to borrow some lumber.
Single Track saw that an argument was going on between Amos Bradish and his hired man, Hank Busby. Single Track hid behind the silo and watched.
And did not. He hid behind some berry bushes.
Amos had a shotgun in his hand.
Did another. Hank had the shotgun.
And Amos told Hank to get off his property.
No, that's a lie. Hank had the gun, swore he'd get Amos. They fit over the gun. Amos managed to get it away from Hank. Amos told him not to come any further, but Hank was so mad he came at him, his arms were turning like a windmill. Amos didn't have no choice but to shoot the gun and shoot quick. And that's my story.
And is that what happened the afternoon of March 27th?
It sure is.
Well, why didn't you say so before?
That's what I've been trying to tell you for 4 days.
Gee, it's sure great to have you back in the office, Chief.
Seems like I've been gone a year instead of 4 days. Yeah, Dewey.
There was a man just here, boss, but he wouldn't tell me his business, so I wouldn't let him in.
Well, now, Dewey, that's fine.
He left a note for you, though.
A note? Holy smoke, listen to this, Pat. Dear Traveler, I owe my life to you. If you hadn't been on that jury, they'd probably have ended up by hanging me. It's men like you who don't try to get out of their duty when called on a jury who make this country what it is. I guess when you come right down to it, that's what we're fighting for in this war, is the right to be heard by your fellow citizens when you're in trouble, and the privilege of being called to listen instead of leaving all judgment to dictators. Signed, Amos Brady.
Gee, boss, you look so funny. Did I do wrong again?
Never mind, Dewey. It's just that I'm downright ashamed of myself. If it hadn't been for you and your civics teacher, this man might have gotten hung at that.
Say, that's a wonderful letter, Traveler.
It sure is, Pat. It certainly is a reward for the trouble I went through.
The man brought a box, too.
A box? What is it?
Well, I peeked in, boss. There was a lot of butter and two hams. But he wouldn't state his business, boss, so I wouldn't let him in, and he took it away with him.
Well, I'll be doggone. Dewey, right now, I feel like hitting you over the head with your civics teacher.
Be sure to stay tuned for an important announcement from the government to be given immediately following this program. Before Bob comes back to bring some backward of his backwards relatives, I want you to meet a man who is not backward at all, at least not about his opinion. Mr. Lucius B. Forthright, who can best be described as...
A snob, sir. I am a snob of the first water.
Well, come on out and dry off. Tell me, Mr. Forthright, what are you snobbish about?
I am a snob about my bath soap, sir. That's why it irritates me no end to hear you say that Lifebuoy is America's most popular toilet, sir.
But it is. The True Story Crosley survey recently proved that.
Tush. A true snob soap must be custom built. My own is tailored to my particular needs. Surely, sir, you don't expect me to purchase Lifebuoy merely because everyone else does.
No, but did you ever stop to consider the reason why so many folks use Lifebuoy?
Sir, I would not deign to investigate the matter. My custom-built soap is the best that money can buy.
Ah, that's your opinion. But what is one man's opinion against millions of others? You can't ignore the fact that millions of smart people take a daily Lifebuoy bath to stop B.O.
B.O.? Oh. Sir, a man as fastidious as I needn't consider such a thing.
But are you sure?
Why, could it be that I offend? What can I do about it?
Use Lifebuoy, the only soap that's custom built to stop B.O.
Custom built, and it stops B.O.?
Yep.
Then call my valet. Fonzerai, Fonzerai, lend me your Lifebuoy. I've got a date with a blonde.
Again, Bob Burns.
Don't that do something to you? You know, you're going to be surprised when I tell you I never took a lesson in my life. Now, you'd imagine now to hear me play, you'd think I'd spent half of my life in a music school. But I didn't. In fact, I never spent much of my life in any kind of a school. Do you know I've spent more time in schoolhouses getting my ration books than I did getting my education? Now, there's one thing before I start my concert. There's one little thing that I have got to get off my mind. It's been kind of worrying me. Something I got to take back. I said here last time I played the piano. I got up here and I made a statement that one of Bing Crosby's horses had finally won a race. Then I told how I knew. I told that I had had dinner at Bing's house the night before and one of his horses come in ahead of the dessert. And I'm sorry. Honestly apologize because... Well, it didn't in the first place. Didn't have no dessert that night. But anyhow, I'm just sorry I made that statement because it might make some people believe that Bing is serving his horse. I think if he wants to do it, I think that's his business. I ain't saying he is, but that's one way he could get even with his horses. It's the truth. His horse has been keeping him in a stew for years. Now, another thing I want to get off my chest, I'm glad that's off anyhow. One thing I want to get off, I've got so many letters from people asking me to play a piano piece all the way through.
And other letters just dared me to do it. But tonight I'm going to do that. I'm going to play a number. I'm going to start at the beginning and play it all through. And I'm going to do it a little different tonight. I'm going to have a rhythm section. Come up here, some of the boys. I'm going to have the bass fiddle be played by Country Washburn, and Spike Jones going to play the drums. And Luther, you better bring your guitar up here, too.
Hi.
Luther, listen, how's that romance coming on, you and your girl?
Oh, I got a new girl now.
Oh, well, now, that's fine. Is she pretty?
Well, I ain't seen her yet. I'm corresponding with her through the Lonely Hearts Club.
Well, then she hasn't seen you either.
No, but I sent her my picture.
Well, that ought to set romance back 50 years. Luther, ain't you afraid your picture's going to kind of give the poor girl a shock?
No, I fixed that. I sent her my picture in the form of a jigsaw puzzle so she can get used to my face a little at a time.
Well, boy, you got through that noble, didn't he? You know, tonight, I'm sorry. I'm awful sorry that I ain't going to sing this. This little number is called a tone poem, and I got words to it, but I ain't going to sing it tonight. But just so you can follow the theme, I would like to tell you what the story's about. Now, you've heard the song, The Glowworm. Well, this ain't it. This is, though, it's about a little worm that went crawling along in the hot sand, and it got awful hot, and it saw a bush over at the side of the road, and it crawled over to get in the shade. And as it went crawling around the base of that bush, looking for a soft place, it ran into another worm. And this little worm says, well, look at there. Says, you're awful cute. What are you doing here? And the other little worm says, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I'm your other end. And now, anyhow, here's the piano solo. Let's go, boys. Got the barrel tonight, except I do want to tell you people over here that I'm kind of sorry if I made joke about the food situation. You know, it's all in joke, but I just want to tell you, if we'll do our part over here like the boys over in North Africa are doing, we'll solve that food situation. They tell me that our boys over in North Africa are making that swastika look more like a pretzel every day. Well, that's all we got for tonight. Except next week we're going to be playing for the boys of the U.S. Maritime Training Station at Catalina Island. I hope you'll all be listening in. Thank you. Good night.
Are you one of those men who shaves in a hurry each morning? Then Lifebuoy Shaving Cream is your dish. You don't have to stop to re-lather, for Lifebuoy's Stay Moist Lather picks up and holds longer, more moisture than quick-drying lathers. The second half of your shave is as good as the first, even with cold water or a used blade. Get a big red tube of Life Boy Shaving Cream and make that morning shave quicker, easier, smoother. The makers of Life Boy will again bring you Bob Burns next week at this same time with more about his relatives, more doings of the Arkansas Traveler, and Spike Jones and his city slickers. Remember, Life Boy is the only soap especially made to stop
B.O.
This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From May 6, 1943, The Bob Burns Show. If there are old-time radio programs you remember and would like to hear again, drop me a line at Dan, D-A-N, at radiofun.info. Thanks for listening. In the Old Time Radio Corner, I'm Dan Hughes.